Time now to go to Sunday school with the professor.
Take it easy, will you?
Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Good answer. Like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, I love the open. Whoa, how do you like that open?
It's tremendous. You know, I love that movie, by the way. I was just listening to Rodney Dangerfield 2 days ago coming into the ballpark. Something piqued my interest with him, and to look at his routine again back when he was on Johnny Carson. You know, Johnny Carson had all the greats on there, and there's good clips on YouTube of Dangerfield and other comedians.
I love. Well, Sam Kennison does you real well.
Yeah,
the professor, huh, Mr. Helper? Very good. Hey, a big game yesterday. The bats broke out. How about Brandon Crawford? What's going on with him?
Yeah, he's hot. He's hot, and. You know, you want to maintain that. That's the deal. You know, this game is something else. It's as you say, it's a marathon. But you know, as a player, you get hot, you get cold, you get lukewarm. And right now, he's hot, and you want to stay in that hot zone as long as you possibly can. It's amazing. You know, you think the game's simple, but it's just not the pitchers you're facing. It's you, your mechanics, your feel, how you're seeing the ball. And that comes and goes over a course of a season.
You know, when you get hot, though, the ball finds a hole. You know what I mean? You know, you get jammed, and all of a sudden the ball is just looping over the shortstop or just falling in. Isn't that funny about baseball?
It really is, and you're right. And you'd much rather be hot getting jam shot hits than lining out at everybody. Because I think there's a psychological part to that where, you know, it destroys your confidence. You start pressing because you need hits. You could be hitting the ball hard 3 times a game right at people, and you go home 0 for 4, 0 for 5. Then you start to press. You want to do more. But in reality, you're doing everything you can. You're just not having any luck. You're hitting the ball hard, and that's what you want to try to accomplish.
Well, the analytical guys will love you. Come on, your BABIP is low, your exit velocity is high, and they say, just wait, it's all going to even out.
Yeah, well, you know, they're on top of it. They're coming up with new stuff every day to look at. I think it's pretty entertaining for the fans out there and the sabermetric community, a whole new group of people that get to enjoy baseball. But they're certainly finding different things to evaluate and talk about every day.
Well, you brought up a good point. We had the conversation the other day with Eno Saris of The Athletic. He's really the guru of all the analytical stuff that's online, that's written about. And you brought up a good question for him.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall the question.
Yeah, the inside step.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about pitchers. And there's a lot of statistics on how to set the defense and what the pitcher's going to do, what the batter's going to do against high velocity or low velocity. But there's not a whole lot on the base running. And now that I'm doing base running with the team, you know, it's hard to get accurate information or break it down like they do in the other areas. You know, when will the pitcher slide step? How often does he slide step? If you're at second base, what is his release times? How often does he go slow? How often does he slide step? Does he do that inside move? Will he do that? Now, we get that from our scouts, right? We have a generic information, but we got to sit here and look at the pitcher, and you got to go watch, you know, games of his and watch with a guy on second or a guy on first to get his move, and it's very time-consuming. You know, somewhere in here, I would love to see for the sabermetric community to do more with the pitchers and giving us more succinct information. Okay, he slide steps 5% of the time, you know, or it's 40% of the time. That'd give you a better understanding when you can take a chance and when you cannot on stealing a base.
No, that's good. And Eno responded to that. He said he's going to look into that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You may be the new statistic. They may have the WOTUS statistic.
Well, I doubt that. But we'll see what he comes up with. It'd be
good.
Interesting to see if he can do anything with it.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think it's a great idea. The Tampa Bay Rays, and they don't have a – they're playing good ball. They're at 500. They're in a tough division with the Yankees, of course, and the Red Sox going nuts. And Toronto playing fairly good, although the A's have taken them apart this weekend. But Sergio Romo
mm-hmm.
started for the Rays yesterday, and what Kevin Cash wanted to do – the Angels have all these right-handed hitters at the top of the lineup.
Right.
He brought Romo in for the first inning to get the righties out, which he did. He got them all out.
Right.
And then they brought in the left-handed starter for the second inning so he wouldn't have to face the big righties for a third time.
Right.
So he could go through the lineup twice. This is that go-through-the-lineup-twice thing. And Romo is going to start again today for Tampa Bay. What do you think?
Well, you know, with all due respect to Kevin Cash, I'm sure that came from the people upstairs. It wasn't, you know, solely his idea. You know, look, two things. The first thing is, you got to alert the other team that you're going to do this because it used to be like that, right?
No,
you didn't know the starting pitcher is to set your lineup as a courtesy now. You know, we'll send our lineup to Colorado. They'll send us their lineup, you know, early, a few hours before the game, and you construct your lineup. Well, years ago, right, you didn't know who was going to start. Or they would start a guy for an inning and bring somebody in and have you put all your lefties. They start the righty, you put in all the lefties, and they bring the lefty in. But the game's not played like that today. There's too much information. It's more of a courtesy. So, as long as they alerted the other team, that's number one. I think that that would be in keeping with what's going on today. But I'm not sold on it. Look, if your starting pitchers are supposed to be your best pitchers on the club, so if he's that good to be one of your starters, why not go through those right-handers early in the game? Now when it gets to the sixth or seventh inning, you have a decision to make. If the pitcher's pitch count is up high, bring Romo in there. What's the difference of using him later on in the game? Now, the other side of it is, you're going to use Romo 2 days in a row. Let's say your starter started that game, and he got through those right-handers and got him out. He didn't get any trouble. Well, he didn't need the reliever. Now Romo is fresh for the next day. Here, he's definitely going to pitch twice, and you're saying my starter isn't good enough to get those guys out. Maybe if it's a fourth or fifth starter and you don't like the matchup, I get it. But if it's one of your top three guys, horses, I really don't follow it that well.
Well, they're going to do it again today, and just you know, Ty Block pitches today, right?
Right. Yes.
Well, Nolan Arenado is 7-for-11 off Ty Block. So what? How about starting Guerin today for the first inning?
Right.
Then bring Ty Block in the next inning.
Right. Right. Well, then you lose a reliever for later on, and you have, you know, one less guy to go. So, you know, it's interesting. There's certainly you know, in a tough division over there, and they like to think out of the box and try new things. And, you know, maybe that creates, look at it, creates interest and maybe the fan interest for them. I don't know. Maybe they are smarter than the rest of us. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, they're doing it, so we'll see. And the other thing he wants to do, he wants to create positionless players. They want to take Kiermaier, make a shortstop, then put him in the outfield. If J.D. Martinez is going to be a pull guy to the, you know, which he's not, he hits all over. But let's say he's the left fielder and he's on defense and there's a pull right-handed hitter up. They want to take J.D. Martinez and put him in right field, put the right fielder in left field.
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. You know, the shift thing is limitless what you can do. The Rangers with Joey Gallo hitting, and you're going to face the Rangers. They the other teams put eight.
Houston put eight. Yeah,
come on, they put eight fielders on the right side of the diamond. This is limitless what can happen here.
Right, no question. And you know, if a guy is not going to bunt, I could buy into the Joey Gallo putting the eight guys over there. You know, I really can if you're in a situation where you don't want him to drive the ball or hit a home run. You know, as far as the outfielders, I think they are interchangeable. Look, this is not so bad. I think back to when I was playing and Rusty Staub was playing for the Mets, right? And he was at the end of his career. He could barely move in the outfield. And he'd be in left field. The lefty would be up. Then the right-handed pull hitter would come up. They'd send him to right field, and he kept going back and forth. So, in essence, that's what they're trying to do. And you know what? Outfielder, most of our outfielders, they could play left, they could play right, you know, and the speed guys can play center. So that's not much of an issue. Where I think you're going to run into problems is going from the infield to the outfield. It's not that easy. And my belief in any big game or wanting to be the best you can be, I've always believed guys are best at playing one position. I don't like a bunch of guys moving around the field. You're just not as good. I did it. You know, I was a shortstop. I played second. I played first. 1 year I played the outfield. There's no way I'm as good moving around the diamond is if I am playing one position and being good at it. So in a big game, in the course of a game, I don't want my outfielder all of a sudden coming into the infield and taking a chance to not be as good as the guy that plays that position every day. So there's a couple different philosophies. Versatility is great. You know, a lot of managers, you want to have a couple guys that you can have some versatility with. But I'm not a believer in having five, six guys moving all over the field.
Well, they mentioned Kiermaier and Althair, Philadelphia, that they're going to move him around all over the place. So that's what, and this is Gabe Kapler. You saw the Phillies. Did the Phillies do anything weird when you were there? I mean, I know they threw a lot of fastballs and you guys
got
swept.
The weirdest thing they did is they swept.
Yeah,
this.
Really?
The weirdest thing. No, not really. They played it pretty straight. You know, they got great starting pitching. All those guys were throwing 94, 95. They have athletes on the field, so they cover the field real good. Honestly, they were pretty generic. You know, I expected to see, you know, a double steal or them try to create. But, no, it was pretty straightforward baseball.
Yeah, he backed off a lot, Gabe Kapler, from the first week. Remember, he didn't warm up a guy and brought him in. He didn't start Herrera, you know, who's probably the best player of the team in one game. And everyone went nuts, and they started criticizing him, and he backed off. He's kind of played it straight since then,
pretty much. I think he's a smart man, obviously. Yeah. Matt Hergis knows him very well. He speaks very highly of him. He's very smart. And you come into a managing situation with your ideas and your thoughts, and then once you get in there and you're doing it, you'll find out your players are going to dictate a lot of what you can do and what's acceptable and what isn't. And when you start getting criticized, not only by the media, but maybe your players, it's time to rethink what you're doing and adjust. And I give them credit for making some adjustments.
Yeah, Phillies and Braves, kind of. Now, you beat the Braves, and then the Phillies beat you. But I'd say the top surprises, really, of the National League, probably the Phillies and the Braves are right up there. What do you think of both of them?
Yeah, young athletic teams. They have, you know, very dynamic players. They have speed. They have power. Philly's pitching was better than I anticipated. The Herrera kid is really coming to his own as an offensive force. So, you know, they have both teams can beat you in a lot of ways. They can play the little game where they can steal a base in a close game, and they have power. Of course, in Atlanta, even Philly, that's a hitter's ballpark. It's easy to hit the ball out of there. But I think it'll come down to the pitching in the end. And Philly's starters, obviously they swept us, but they pitch very, very well. They have good stuff. So I think they're going to be in it for the long haul.
Yeah, I like it. I like what I saw in that little Albies is something else. He's doing Altuve stuff.
Yeah, another kid from Carousel.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
what does Bam Bam say about these guys? Where, you know, well, how does Bam Bam ever lose a game in the WBC?
Well, he did pretty darn good, you know. It's just a factory for ball players. They love baseball. As you know, I went down there 3 years ago. He has his winter clinic for the kids on the island and all the coaches, and I went down with Bam Bam and helped them do that. And they're so enthusiastic about baseball. But what impressed me the most was how these kids all speak three and four languages. Yeah. I remember talking to one 10-year-old, and I'm trying to speak my broken Spanish to him because they speak Pompimento, which is the language of the island. They speak Spanish. They speak English. Some of them speaks French. And I was talking to the kid in my broken Spanish, his 10-year-old. He finally looked at me and he goes, "I speak English." So that kind of woke me up, and I had to ask every kid before I spoke to him, you know, "Do you speak English?"
Yeah, so. what a hotbed of baseball.
It really is.
I got to
really
talk more to Bam Bam about that.
Yeah,
very good. Hey, Pablo Sandoval, speaking of interesting situations, yesterday the writers wrote about it. They talked to you about it. Second base in his future? Come on. Pablo?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. You know, you have to adjust the situations that you have. We have some people out. And, you know, I really could see an opportunity arise for him when we're losing a game and we want to pinch hit Pablo for somebody and then leave him in at second base. It gives you an option. Maybe it's a tough righty, you know, and Tomlinson's at the plate. And you say, we're losing. What the heck? Let's do it. Now, I will tell you, you know, catching ground balls, obviously he's got good hands.
Yeah.
He's got a nice arm. He's got quick feet for a big guy. And that's why he was a very good third baseman, is his first step is good. Now, once he's got to keep moving, it's not where you want it to be. And the range would be an issue. But to get the bat in the lineup, I think that, you know, if the ball's hit at him in routine plays, I think he can do the job.
Boy, that would be if you saw him pitch.
Right.
That was one thing. Then see him at second base, that would be another thing. Who saw this coming with him? You know, he gets released by the Red Sox and just the career is at a dead end, and he comes back here and he's sort of revived his whole deal, and he's a good pinch hitter.
Yes, he's an outstanding pinch. He always could hit, and he's made some adjustments at the plate, and he's doing a great job in the role that he is. And if Boach can, you know, get him a pinch hit and get his bat in there a little bit more, but keeping the option open, you know, I don't think, you know, it remains to be seen if or how much he does play there.
Yeah.
But we want to prepare him in case we want to put him in that position. And yesterday in the clubhouse, you know, the T-shirts came out, "Let Pablo pitch." And I asked him yesterday, I said, he was wearing a shirt while we were doing the early ground balls. I said, "Pablo, you have the wrong shirt on. Where's the Let Pablo Play Second T-shirt? When's that coming out?"
Well, I could see this, you know, just to carry it one crazy step further. You know, there are times when players play every position. You know, we've seen that. Campy Campanaris did it years ago. We've seen a few players do it. I guess, well, if he can pitch, we know he can catch.
Yeah.
He can pitch.
Right.
And you got him all over the infield. I guess you just have to put him in the outfield, and maybe one day he'll play every position.
Well, we saw him play the outfield in Taiwan.
True. That's right.
Okay, when I went with Boach with the All-Star Series we did about 8 years ago, and Boach put him in left field, and Curtis Granderson was in center. And let's just say Curtis Granderson caught everything.
Very good. All right, that would be fun. That'd be a good promote. Got to get Russ Stanley on this. A new promotion. All right, very good. Beta Breakers is today, and I know a lot of people driving around. I know you and I got off the freeway at a different exit. You couldn't even get off downtown. But you see any of the Beta Breakers?
I just saw a few. You know, coming off, I tried to avoid it, but. Yeah, you know what? It's a strange crowd. I'll be honest with you, coming from the East Coast. I saw a little bit last year as well, and it's, you know, what do you say? I mean, I guess they have a good time. It's a party. It's not just a marathon. It's a time to come out and celebrate. So people are having a good time today. No doubt.
Come on, it's San Francisco. I love it. I love seeing it. It's just it's incredible. So that's today. If you're driving around, be aware that that's going on today. Gomez. First of all, he got a couple of nice hits, and I want to tell you something. He turned some double plays at second. He really did. He turned some double plays at second. So let's talk about his defense first. Then I want to talk about his base running.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he's still a work in progress. Look, he was in Double A for us. He's, you know, we know he can hit. And obviously, you know, you always want to get better as a hitter. I mean, you get to the major leagues, when you have a weakness, they're going to exploit it. If you have a hard time hitting a breaking ball, you're going to see breaking balls. That doesn't happen in the minor leagues. So the more at-bats you get under your belt, the better you're going to be. But I really think the part of his game that needs to be upped is the defensive side, and he needs to work extremely hard at it. So we're trying to do that. He's getting better. His double play is much better than it was a couple of years ago. And he's still wet behind the ears. He still has a long way to go at second to master the position, the nuances of the position. Again, like I was telling you, I don't, you know, if you tried to move him to the outfield and then put him to third and he's trying to learn second, he'd have a difficult time, you know, so he's not quite there yet. So he's working on it. He's a work in progress.
All right. He had a base running adventure, one of those adventures, and Duval threw a ball to the plate. He was on third tagging up, and the ball was way offline, went past the catcher and everything else, and then he started doing the cha-cha coming down the line. What was going on with him, and how does he read that? What's supposed to happen?
Yeah. Well, you know, in the fly ball situation, a sacrifice fly, I'm either going to tell the runner to go, stay, or draw a throw. Okay. And typically, I don't tell him to draw a throw with a guy that's not a real good runner. I told him to stay. But as a runner, what you want to do is you want to break and read the throw on your own. Even if you're staying put, you just don't quit on the play. And he took a couple steps. He didn't follow the ball. So if you take a couple steps and you read the throw and you see everybody moving off a home plate and you see that throw really, really high, well, then you can go ahead and continue. Now, once the ball hit the backstop and it's by the catcher's feet and it's hard to tell a runner to go, even though it looked terrible, right? And the throw's way off. The catcher doesn't know where it's at, but it's right at his feet. If he picks it up in 1 second and throws it, he's out. So he's on his own at that point to try to score. He went halfway, and he felt the same way. The ball was right there in front of him. When's he going to pick it up? So when you don't have great speed, it's harder to execute these broken plays or read a high throw because you just don't have the speed. So he needs to keep his eye on the ball a little bit better. And in defense of him, it's not an easier throw to read. If it was in center or right field, you got a perfect view of it.
Okay.
But this is behind you.
Okay.
You know, so you have to turn around and look, and then you don't see the catcher or home plate. You don't have the angle on it that you would like. So it's unfortunate. There's a lot of plays come up like that in the big leagues that look bad. Yesterday it happened with Crawford. Ball hit to right field. He had a freeze because it was a line drive. He got, you know, a poor jump at second because he's doing the right thing. You don't want to get doubled off. Now he comes to third. The guy airmails the ball up the third baseline a little bit, and we don't score. It looks terrible, like he would have scored. But, you know, you only could do what you can do to read the play and where he was at.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you explained that. That's why you're the professor. You are the professor. You know that. I'm glad you explained that because to the fans sitting there, it looks like what's going on.
Right.
And so, really, it does take your explanation, really.
Well, you can only go on in my regard is, you know, Adam Duvall's got above average arm. He's shallow. We have a runner with no speed. We have a decent hitter coming up next. We're not going to force him. But when a guy uncorks one and it's that bad, you know, it looks terrible. But if you have the right angle on it and you're a heads-up, instinctive base runner, you can score on those balls. And that's what you're looking for in base runners. Base runners are always alert, never take your eye off the ball, and have good instincts. But not everybody does.
Yeah, great, great, great description from the professor here on Sunday morning. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, talk a little bit with you about the draft that is coming up. And I'm going to make you the sort of a scouting director, just in general. What would you look for in the draft coming up? Giants have a pretty high pick, number two pick in the country, a very important pick coming up. So we'll talk about that. And also a little bit about relays. I'm seeing so many balls from the outfielder go wildly over the cutoff guy. Where's the next guy? Where's the pitcher supposed to be and all that? So we're going to talk about that. And also the Warriors play today. I want to get your thought on that. And Carmen will have a good question for you, too. All right, that is Ron Wotus, the professor. We'll take a break. More coming up right after this. All right, we've got baseball coming up today. It is the Giants and the Rockies. We've got Tyler Anderson, lefty for the Rockies today, 28 years old at the University of Oregon. And for the Giants, it is the 27-year-old lefty out of Creighton, Ty Block from Colorado, and Anderson from U of O up there in Oregon. So that is the matchup for today. Ron Wotus, the professor, joins us. Well, if you were running the draft and you were the super scout, and you had to pick a guy, and you've been around the game so long, what would you look for in a young player? What's the one thing you'd want to see?
Well, I think, you know, you're talking about a number one pick. If you're talking about a number one pick, there's certain tools that you want to see. And, you know, John Barr's got a tough job. You have all these players available. Who can you sign? You know, where do you pick? You know, things fall different ways. But I think my experience in the game, there's one thing that most of the great players have, and that is they have, you know, they have good baseball instincts or athletic instincts. They're competitors, and they have a good feel for the game because there's a lot of players that have tools. You know, you say this guy's got all he can throw, he can run, but those guys don't always make it. And when I came up with the Pirates, we had a lot of players that had just physical tools, but they didn't have the key to the toolbox, so they couldn't play the game. So I think that's important. I think back in the day, the scouts used to speak to the players. They would speak to the high school coaches. I know the people that scouted me, they talked to my basketball coach. They talked to my baseball coach. What kind of athlete is he? You know, what kind of person is he? And I think those things are important, very important. So if you can get that along with a player with the five tools, a position player like a Bryce Harper or Mike Trout, they could do everything. They could hit, run, field, hit with power, and throw. You want that upside. You know, you don't want it just a guy that's got two tools and, you know, he doesn't have that, that big upside when you're talking about a high pick in the game.
Yeah, the tough one is picking the high school kid because, look, how much changes about your – think of your life from 17 to 21 that goes on in the development. So I think the toughest challenge really is the high school kid.
It is. And again, you know, years ago, I think most teams, you know, gravitated towards a high school kid because they could groom them the way they wanted to. There was less money involved. You know, out of college, it's a much surer thing. You know what type of player he's going to be and how he's going to perform to some degree because of the level of baseball. You're right. It's hard picking the high school kid, but if you can get the right high school kid, the reward is off the charts, I think, better than a lot of the college players.
Yeah, look at Kane and Bumgarner.
No question.
Those are two good high school picks. All right, we'll see. It's coming up in a few weeks. It's going to be interesting. The Giants have the number two pick in the country. Relays. The Nationals lost the game last night because the left fielder overthrew the cutoff man and overthrew the third baseman, everybody in the world, and the run scored, and they ended up losing the game 5-4 to the Dodgers last night. Take us to the professor, just a little bit on these cutoffs from left field. We saw it in the World Series against Detroit, and
right.
It was a tremendous play that ended up getting field. Was it, I forget who was at the plate.
It was
the big guy.
Yeah.
Was it Prince Fielder at the plate? I forget who it was.
I forget who it was. I wanted to say it was Prince, but no, we were playing Detroit. He was over there at that time.
I don't know, maybe he was still there then. Yeah. Who knows? But
okay.
It was a great play,
Prince,
great play at the plate. So take us through that relay, because you see it so many times. Where's the ball supposed to go? Where are people supposed to be?
Well, with the man on first, the one that was in the World Series, there's a runner on first, and the ball goes down the left field line. You know, the shortstop goes out first. He's the first relay guy. And then the second baseman comes all the way behind the shortstop.
Okay.
You know, when the ball's in the gaps, whether it's on a left field line, right field line, you know, right center field gap, you have two guys go out. And, you know, the outfielder wants to hit the first guy. But you have the second guy there 10 to 15 yards behind him in case the ball is overthrown, that he can handle it. And in the one you were talking about in against the Tigers, the first guy was missed because we got a short left field down here. So the outfielder, you know, you got to go out the proper distance, too. If you go out too far, now the outfielder overthrows you. You want the outfielder to make the long throw, and you want to hit the first guy if you can. The trail runner, fielder is there to help you with the play. You know, if the play is going to be at home, or third, you know, so he helps you. But the important fact is, if you're the lead guy, you got to peek yourself and have an idea whether you have a play or not. He's only there for confirmation that you're doing the right thing. Because if you catch the ball and listen to the guy behind you, and you throw the ball at the wrong base, or you make a throw and you have no play and it kicks away, who's going to get blamed? The trail guy? Well, he told me to do it? No. So you have to look yourself. You have to peek and know what you want to do. And in the one in the World Series, obviously, we missed the first guy. Went to Marco Scudero. Good relay home, and we threw him out at the plate.
Yeah, very good. Boy, there was a famous play in the World Series in 1946, you know, Johnny Pesky. You remember Johnny Pesky?
Oh, sure, yeah.
The Red Sox.
Pesky
and,
pole.
Right, and, well, he got a relay from Charlie Culberson's great uncle, Leon
really?
Culberson, threw the ball in. He was playing because Dom DiMaggio sprained his ankle. So the ball was in left center. Leon Culberson threw it into Johnny Pesky, and Pesky didn't do what you just said. And Enos Slaughter kept running from first base on the single, the left center field. And Pesky hesitated.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know what to do because he didn't peek, and probably no one told him.
Right.
And he sort of double-clutched, and
right.
Slaughter kept going and scored the winning run in the World Series.
Yeah, you know, cutoffs and relays in spring training when we do the fundamentals, you know, you have bunt plays, you have first and third defense, you have bunt plays with man on first, bunt plays with man on first and second. The cutoffs and relays are the most important fundamental we do. They come up in every game, and it usually costs you a run or saves you a run. And it's designed, you know, to stop runners from scoring, but also to keep the double play in order. When you overthrow somebody, you know, say it's a base hit to left field and he throws the ball home and he over, and that batter runner goes to second base, the guy just got a free base. And it comes up all the time. So, you know, Craw, Joe, Panic, we've always emphasized here. And the hard thing is you don't get to work on it a whole lot because you got the eyes using their arms to their maximum effort. In this day and age, we don't take infield. You don't want anybody to get injured. So you really don't go out and work on it as much as you should. But it's a very, very important fundamental.
Yeah, we'll see it today. I'll guarantee you we'll see it today. Yeah. We'll see it. It's a great fundamental. That's a good answer for that one. Carmen, you got a question for the professor here this morning?
Sure. Marty and I and Allie started a podcast, and this week we talked about what kind of food kiosk we'd like to see at AT&T Park that isn't already here. I know that you like food. I also like food. Is there something you'd like to see at the park?
Great question, Carmen. I'm glad you brought food into the mix.
I always bring food in the mix.
Yeah. Well, a couple of my favorites, and I think the first one they probably already have, you know. They have hot dogs. Do they have Polish sausage? Do they have that with onions and peppers?
Yeah.
They have that? Oh, good. So the second one is more in tune to what I really enjoy. What about a poke bowl?
Ooh.
Some ahi tuna, a poke bowl a la Hawaii. It's healthy. It's California. We're right here by the water, and it's outstanding.
I think they got it.
Do they?
Yeah.
I think they have ahi tuna, like, upstairs in the club level, but I don't know if they have a whole bowl going on.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're doing a good job here with the food. There's no question about it. And I don't know all the food they have because – you know, we're eating good in the clubhouse, but I hear people talk about the garlic fries and the cha-cha bowls and all the food all the time, friends that come here. And I've never been into the concession stand or to the restaurants to really see what they have.
They had something before the season. They had a tasting thing, and there was a guy making the poke bowl.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
That's great.
So I think they have it somewhere in the park. You know what my answer was? I'll tell you. I grew up in Brooklyn. Carmen liked this one. And we used to go to the candy store. And, you know, you'd sit on the little swivel chair, you know, mm-hmm. the little bar stool that mm-hmm. swiveled around. And, you know, you'd say you wanted an egg cream. And what that was milk, Fox's You Bet, or the Bosco, you know, the chocolate syrup. And then they'd put seltzer in there and mix it up, and that's what you got.
Really?
And that was a Brooklyn thing. Now you got an egg cream. That's what they used to call it. I want an egg cream at the ballpark.
My mom's from Brooklyn. I never heard of that.
We did
the chocolate milk, but we never put the seltzer water in there. An egg cream.
Egg cream.
I'll ask her about that.
It's such an Ebbets Field. It's such a Brooklyn thing.
I thought you were going to go with maybe a saltwater taffy or rock candy. Remember the pure sugar rock candy that people eat?
I can't stand that. I never could understand saltwater taffy. I never could understand. Turkish taffy? No, never. I couldn't get it.
I thought you were going to say New York bagels. Every time I go to New York, you make me bring you a bag full of bagels.
Well, then we could have. Well, we have that at the park somewhere. But an
sure
egg cream at the park.
I'll look into that.
I would go for that. All right. Warriors are playing tonight. How about that? They're 1-1 with Houston. They're sort of running at Steph Curry now. And, boy, it's an exciting time for Bay Area sports, huh?
It sure is. Well, the Warriors are tremendous. Look at the championships, the way they play the game, the excitement. I'm fortunate enough to go to about 4 or 5 games in the wintertime. I love going to watch them play. It's a great night out and a great team to watch. And we're certainly pulling for them. I know everybody in the clubhouse is. And I just wish, you know, one thing. I don't know if they can move that game. They're at home now. If they can move a game to tomorrow, play tomorrow in Houston, that's where we're headed. We have the off day. It'd be nice to be able to go to the game Monday night. So if anybody can get that done, I'd like that to happen.
Good luck. If you were commissioner for a day, maybe you could pull it off. You'd have to be commissioner for a day.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to happen. You're right at this point. But we're pulling for them. And they're good. You know, when you win championships like that, you know, the fan base, everybody just expects them to win again. And it's just not that easy to continue to do it year after year after year. But they have the team to do it, and we hope people stay healthy and they get it done.
And one last thing for you. I know it's great to have you. We love these Sunday morning things. Everyone all over the Bay Area, you got 500,000 people listening to the professor on every Sunday morning here. The bullpen cart in Arizona, they're starting to use it now. Doolittle's from Washington. He said he's going to use it, and other people are starting to use it. What do you think about the revival of the bullpen card? You know, when you played, didn't they have those cards to take the relievers in?
All the time. That was, you know, you didn't want the guy to expend any more energy. You know, they put them in a cart and they drive them out there. I like it. I think obviously somebody's making some money with it, with the marketing. Yeah. That's probably why it came back in. But I think it's a great option for the pitchers. Not every pitcher wants to come in from the bullpen, jogging in and get a little winded. Some maybe want to get their blood flowing. But not every pitcher wants to be Heath Bell. Remember him? He'd come running in from Arizona and he'd slide. He'd slide once in a while at the pitcher's mound and exert all that energy. And who knows if he's going to get hurt. So I like it. I think it's a fun thing. They have the Dunkin' Donuts cart out there in Boston. And, yeah, it's a good option for the pitchers.
Now, could you use it for you on one of the when you're on the right field side and you got to go to third base?
Now, that's a good idea, Marty. I don't know why anybody hasn't thought about that. But, yeah, that would be great. L.A., Arizona, there's long runs. I would use it. I would.
You would. No problem. No problem whatsoever. Looking at where we are here at this part of the season as we get I don't know. Things heat up a little bit. You know, you're getting in there. You played 45 games, 47 games. It gets a little more tense at this time. We had a little incident in Cincinnati yesterday. Amir Garrett looked at Javier Baez after punching him out, and Baez said something, and next thing you knew, the bench is emptied. So two questions for you. One, is it part of the game? I guess it is. But the second is, who is the most demonstrative player you ever played with, you know, who would sort of look at the other team and sort of start trouble?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because when we played, you didn't have a lot of that going on. And, you know, nobody comes to mind. If somebody was getting in trouble, it would have stood out so much to me that it should come to me quickly. But I'm having a hard time finding somebody. I remember guys in the minor leagues, but you know, the fans here, they're not going to remember the Connor McGee's and guys that are getting in trouble in Double A and Triple A. That major leaguers, of course, you know, I only spent parts of a few years up there, so I can't give you a good answer. But I know today there's a lot of them. You know who wasn't getting in trouble but used to incite the other team was Kenny Lofton.
Oh, okay.
Remember Kenny Lofton in Cleveland? You throw that ball inside, he'd look at the pitcher and jump back. He was always pulling some kind of stunt to get under your skin and upset you. And then he got traded, and he started playing for us, and he used to drive La Russa in St. Louis Wild because he'd do that type of stuff. And when he was on your side, we loved him to death. He really got things going. He got on base and he made things happen. So Kenny Lofton comes to mind in that regard.
Yeah, good. Baez certainly is sort of a magnet for this stuff, isn't he?
Well, he brings it on himself. Look, I mean, you know, the unwritten rules of baseball, nobody knows where the lines are drawn anymore, whether you're hitting a home run or jogging around the bases or, you know, this guy's standing in front of the fielder so he can't relay signs at second base. He's in front of the shortstop. No, he's the shortstop standing in front of the runner, so the runner can't relay the signs. Relaying the signs goes on, there's no doubt, but it's up to the catcher and the pitcher, you know, to use a different sign, change your signs, or, you know, set up inside, outside and throw one inside so you put a stop to it. But this guy chooses to stand in front of the runner.
Okay.
I'm telling you, back in the day when we played, somebody did that to you, there'd be a fight right on the field.
Okay.
And he incites a lot of these things. So, you know, the pitcher yesterday in Cincinnati, in my opinion, is out of line. But Baez is a guy that brings us on because of the way, the actions and the things that he does.
All right, we love baseball. What a game. What a game. And, you know, you're right in the middle of everything. We're right in the middle of it. And I look for a good summer. I really do, when you get everybody back.
I agree with you, Marty. I like where we're at. Look, we'd like to be doing better, but, you know, we got Cueto and Baum and Panic and Melanson sitting here in the wings.
Williamson.
Williamson is close, and we can get our people back. I like where we're at, and, you know, we have some veterans that have been through it. These guys know how to win. And when it gets closer to the finish line, I like the players we have on the field.
Yeah, not bad. All right. Hey, thanks as always. Have a great trip. Boy, Houston, the Cubs, and Colorado. You got quite a trip ahead of you.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough trip. Some good teams. And, you know, well, we're looking forward to it, right? We got a couple off days. That'll be nice. Everybody could use a little bit of a blow in the long season.
Well, as I said yesterday, if you want to be a team, you got to beat a team.
Right,
Carmen? Isn't that what
yeah,
I said?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
that
I said,
was weird.
It was weird. It was a little weird, but what I meant was you got to beat good teams.
Right, right. If you want to be the good team, you got to beat the good team. No question.
I just left out a couple of words.
You had a little twist on that. I like that. The Marty Lurieism. I like it.
All right, well, have a great time, and thanks so much for being on.
You too. Enjoyed it.
That is the professor, Ron Wotus. More coming up on Sunday morning, our favorite, right here on the Sports Leader.